Hey everyone, I'm Jeff Gibber, the president and chief strategist of True Voice Media. I'm also the host of Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast, where I bring on fascinating people from all walks of life and pick their brains about social media, entrepreneurialism, success, and so much more. For around the next 30 minutes, I get to have a really interesting conversation. You should stick around and listen in. So without further delay, let's get started.
This is episode 37. You're here with the soulful sounds of Jeff Gibbard, and I have a guest with me by the name of Howard Yermish, and Howard is an
also has
dude.
Soulful sounds.
He has
also
a soulful deep sound and a much nicer microphone than me. I'm going to introduce you as you would on your LinkedIn profile as a creative human, technologist, and online marketing strategist. Howard, welcome to the show and introduce yourself to all the lovely people listening.
Thank you, Jeff. My name's Howard Yermish. I've been making stuff for the interwebs since the early 90s. And I've been making stuff with technology since as long as I can remember. I'm the son of a computer scientist. This stuff has just been always around for me. No one ever told me computers and technology was hard. So I just pretended like it wasn't, and I made stuff with it. But definitely all the way through this has been making art, whether it's music or photography or videos or podcasts, online courses that I'm doing a lot now, websites that I've done professionally for many, many years, all kinds of things like that. I just like making stuff. I think if I had to, if someone said, what do you want to call your business if you could start it over, I would call it Making Digital Stuff. And that would be my name. But
that's a really good name for a blog, I think.
It is. I actually own the domain, and maybe someday I'll do it, but not today.
I encourage you to. It's interesting because you bring up it's an interesting point. You know, I grew up playing with things on the internet, but I never really tried to break things. I just was never really scared to play with things and see how they worked and whatever. But you actually, I think, build physical things. You don't just actually like your obsession with audio and video production and things like that is actually part and parcel of using real physical things. Whereas I tend to be terrified of real physical things and only like to exist with the ones and zeros. So it's interesting because both you and I, being online marketing strategists and helping people to understand this digital space, you come from a space where you've worked with both physical and digital and have no fear going into it, whereas I have fear with the physical things. So I think there's an element of people who are successful in this space have a general feeling of fearlessness and that they're not going to break things. Would you say that there is a sense of fearlessness in you that allows you to be like this?
I think it's, I would absolutely agree.
Or is it curiosity, or is it like, what is it?
I know that I'm probably not going to kill myself in the process of doing it. And so I think about, like, what's the worst case scenario of this thing I'm about to try? So let's say I said, you know what, I'm going to make an ice bucket challenge video. So where do you fail? Well, you fail because you, like, knock the side of your house off while you're doing it. So as long as you limit your risk to, I am not going to get shot by a gun, I am not going to, like, slip on asphalt, like, I'm not going to actually get damaged in doing this. If the video production isn't perfect, that's not the point. The point is to make something that people will want to see or would enjoy seeing that really shows your personality. So, you know, sometimes that means you have to, like, work with your kids and say, how do we make a good ice bucket challenge video? Or how do we, you know, look, all we've got at home is this iPhone and we want to record something. So what are we going to do? Well, the worst that can happen is that it comes out horrible. And so you delete it. That's not a lot of pain. Now, I can tell you, because I am into, I'll call it the physical of stuff. I've done some maker things where I build stuff and I encourage my kids to do it. I actually had a situation where when I first started doing my own video production, I said, I'm going to make my own LED lights. Now, what an idiot thing that was, because thankfully I didn't electrocute myself. But the whole process of learning how to make LEDs and doing different things with the panels and buying the strips and wiring it in and making them dimmable and finally getting it so these panels worked, I got it to the point where I was like, wow, I have these two panels and they work. And then I realized, oh, I want these to be like perfect on the ends of stands. So I have to build wooden housings. And I went, okay, I'm going to call timeout. These things are not going to be production quality the way that I want it. But now I know exactly how this works. And if I ever need to do something in the future, I can. So my daughter's Halloween costumes always have electricity in them. She was recently.
Wow, really?
Yeah, she
that
was
recently. That is a bold choice.
It is. Well, my the 10-year-old for this past Halloween, she was a tree with all kinds of vines all over it, but the vines were all laced, the stems were all L-wire, which is that sort of light up glowy wire.
Yep.
So she got into school and everyone's like, oh my God, that is the coolest, you know, that is the coolest costume ever. Instead of it just being, oh, I'm wearing a green shirt with a couple of leaves stapled to it, it was, holy crap. And, you know, battery packs on the hips and all this stuff. And she's like, I love this. So, but if you're willing to try stuff like that, then when it comes time to making a podcast or doing a video or doing anything like that, you know, you're just not going to, you're not going to ruin the planet with your, you know, with trying things. And the worst that can happen is you actually get it right. Because then you're going to try to duplicate it and you're going to go, now, what did I do to make this work? How do I capture that in a bottle? And that's actually, I found that it gets harder when you have some success, because then you start really iterating on the process and making it better. But, you know, it's positive energy and it just drives you forward over and over.
Yeah. I mean, I always say to clients, you're not going to break the internet. You know, and I'm not talking about Kim Kardashian's oily butt. I'm talking about, like, you actually aren't going to cause the internet to fail. But it's interesting because there are these different levels of fear that I think are kind of baked into this conversation. So when it comes to physical things, I'm actually worried of breaking things, of wasting money because I purchased something and I broke it, or electrocuting myself or hurting myself with power tools. That's always terrifying. In the digital space, I tend to be very fearless about those sort of things. But then I think about my clients and I think, well, some of them, you know, to your point of making a video, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And I think there's the fear that is, I'm going to hurt myself, or you know, I will break something, right? That's one type of fear. And I think there's another type of fear that might be fear of embarrassment or fear of public ridicule or things like that. So I think there's a whole nother element to what may stop people from doing things. And I think us being out there helping to provide them with guidance and move them in the right direction is one of the things that that allows people to feel a little bit more comfortable. So it's good that there's people out there like us that are fearless. Kudos to us.
Exactly. I just want to comment on that. The number of times, and you've probably seen this too, that a client will bring me an example and say, I want to do something like this. And then I have to kind of say to them, understand that this company took a big risk and that's why you love it so much. And those big risks of, hey, we're going to put something out there and we might be vulnerable by putting it out there. We might, you know, it might crash and burn. It might not hit the way that we want it.
Or offend somebody.
It might offend somebody. Or we might spend a lot of money producing it and it not have the result. But all of these companies, the examples, they took a risk. So if you're willing to take that risk, we can try to make something pretty awesome. If you're not, we can make something relatively mediocre that won't offend people and will get you a relatively mediocre result, and you'll be kind of mediocrely pleased and you'll not do it again the next time because you didn't get the result that you wanted and it didn't make you feel great and you didn't get that buzz from doing something awesome. So, you know, that's when you say to yourself, why are we doing this? It's not special. It's not unique. It doesn't help you any. It just kind of, you know, keeps the needle at a nice center course and everyone's happy with the same.
Yeah, that's not the kind of work that drives us and makes us excited, is it? No, not much at all.
Not me.
Well, talk to me about some of the things you've been working on, man. I mean, you know, you and I connected first at PodCamp like 2 or 3 years ago, and we've just kept in touch mainly digitally. Every once in a while, I'm meeting up for lunch and just keeping in touch. We're obviously in the same kind of space together. You are coming through and I'm seeing that you're doing a lot of LinkedIn courses. You know, I put it out there. I let my my people know about it because I trust what you're doing. Tell me about some of the things that you're doing with these LinkedIn courses. And from what it seems like, you have a very different slant on it than, because there's a lot of courses out there about it. What are you doing that's different about it?
Sure. I kind of decided a little bit ago that I wanted to focus all my new efforts on creating online courses. I've always had a passion for teaching, and I've always had a passion for technology. And I just looked at the marketplace and said, I think I can make courses that are unique and cover topics in a way that becomes very relevant to people. So before I created my LinkedIn course that got launched about barely a month ago, before I even started writing that, I went and looked at every single possible LinkedIn course I could. Every seminar, webinar, books, ebooks, everything that I could get my hands on. And there was a very common trend with just about everything that I found. I mean, the number of ones that weren't like this, I could count on one hand and have four fingers left. There was really very little out there that just was different than this. They were all inspirational. So great content, great philosophy, and different philosophies, different approaches, but all of them were LinkedIn. I mean, I'll boil them down to this. LinkedIn is awesome. You should be awesome with LinkedIn. And here's the things that you should be doing so that you can be super awesome with LinkedIn. Now go do something. And what would happen is people would take the course. I took a bunch of them and I would say, whoa, that was great. I love how they put this. And oh, I'm going to do this. And then the next day they open up the LinkedIn browser and they're lost because the number of actionable things that people could do was very little. Even when people would say, hey, here are 10 things that you do on LinkedIn. Well, the problem is you go do those 10 things and then the next day happens and you only do two of those 10 things. And then the next day happens and then you don't even go on LinkedIn. And maybe 3 weeks later you go back and you maybe do one of those things. And then it's gone. And there's nothing that says this is going to work. Now, I took an approach years ago when I started training clients, which was I needed them to keep track of what they were doing. I needed some kind of metric. So if they said, hey, I'm going to get 10 new connections each week and they're going to come from networking events or people I already know or an introduction to someone, but I'm going to do 10 a week. I knew if they could do 10 new ones a week and then we measure that progress and not how many connections do you have, but how many new connections are you making? And can you be consistent about that? And what's that leading to? And are you asking for the sale? If we weren't measuring that progress, nothing would happen because the first week they would make 10 and then the next week they would make two. And then the third week they wouldn't even go on LinkedIn. And so me training these clients one-to-one going, you're not making progress. We need to make progress. If you don't care, then let's stop. You don't like, I'd love to take your money for you not to do any work. That's totally fine with me. But that's not the guy I am. So I would say I don't want to say I would fire clients, but I would tell them, you're not doing the work that you need to do to make yourself successful. Meeting with me for an hour over a GoToMeeting or something like that is not helping you any. It's just taking up an hour of your time. Why don't you use that hour to actually connect with 10 people? Because that's what you were supposed to do last week. You haven't done it. Go do it right now. And so I started developing kind of worksheets. Some of it was for myself, but it became for the clients. All right, these are the things that you have to do for next week. Check off these boxes. And then we're going to keep score. And I basically looked at it and said, you need to have three areas of LinkedIn that are awesome. One is focused on connecting with new people. That is expanding your network from what it is right now. The second is nurturing all of your existing connections. And that's all corners of the connections, whether they're really amazing key contacts or people who you just met somewhere. You want to give that opportunity for it to grow. You never know what people do in terms of moving positions and whatever. And the third piece was flat out prospecting. Like, I don't want a cold call, so I'm going to find a way to go for a target and find people that are going to be my customers, and I'm going to flat out do that. So those three areas, if they weren't being measured, then one of them was going to suffer, if not both or all three. You needed to have all those three areas measured properly. And so I kind of designed my whole system for how I train clients around connect with new people, nurture existing clients, and prospect. And there are activities for all three of those things that if you aren't doing them, it will show up in your scores. So if you're not getting enough appointments, chances are you're not making enough new connections and you're not reaching out to your existing connections in a way that makes them feel unique and special. There are lots of systems where they'll go in and they'll send an automated message to all of your LinkedIn contacts. And that sounds like an automated message to all your LinkedIn contacts. So you'll work really hard and someone will go do it for you. And for a week, you'll spam your network. And that doesn't work because in week two, you can't do it again because it doesn't work even worse the second week. So little bits at a time in unique ways. So you would get a message that was, hey, Jeff, it's been a while since we had lunch together. Let's, you know, get together and do X, Y, and Z. It's a human connection, nothing more. It's just we're using LinkedIn as a way to kind of, you know, define the network so that your activities have sort of a central point to jump off from. And so I started designing this course and writing it. And my goal was to write the most efficient LinkedIn training so that it wasn't a 16-hour course that you would never get to the second hour from because you knew you would never finish 16. I designed it so that the same 20 minutes a day that I talk to people about saying that's all I do on LinkedIn and that's all I recommend that people do, I wanted you to be able to learn it inside of that time. So different sections only take a few minutes and you learn these different sections. The total course end to end in video is a little under 3 hours. And you watch it at different times. So when you're doing the on-ramp weeks, you watch the half hour of on-ramp. the next week you watch, hey, this is, you know, on-ramp week two, and you watch the little bits so you can learn all the different skills. But the idea being, you know, in order to make a good course, I would have to do things like study instructional design, not just say, hey, look, I'm awesome at LinkedIn, which meant all of the creative stuff, all the video production, all of the screencasting, all of the podcasting, all of the audio, all of these things that I love to do as a creative person needed to serve this class so that it wasn't going to be a course and that people would never get to the end and they would never be able to measure their progress and they would never see a result. That wasn't my goal, wasn't to sell a course. Mm-hmm. My goal was to basically every person who came to me and said, I want to train one-to-one with you, I wanted to, and this, you'll laugh about this, I wanted to raise my rates. I wanted to say, if you want to work one-to-one with me, you're going to have to pay a lot of money because I'm busy. I don't have a lot of time for one-to-ones. Why don't you take this class? And then after you're through that class, we can meet once a month for a half hour and we'll tweak things and we'll customize it, but you're going to get what's in this course from me.
Well, so, also at the level that you're at and the sort of things you want to talk about clients with, if you're spending too much time on that 101 stuff, it makes it difficult for you to have the time to get into that advanced stuff. And not only that, but if one of the challenges you're having is they're not doing what you say in the first place, it's much better at least if they're on their own automated track and it's up to them. If they want handholding
for it,
you know, it's kind of tough. You'd have to raise your rates to such a point where even if they don't do it, you're like, okay, you know what? Well, if you're going to pay me this much and you know that you're not going to do it, I'll keep taking your money, which is a tough part. Well, let me ask you some questions about, you know, it maybe things that are in your course that may not. But mm-hmm. what I'd love to ask you about is there are going to be people listening to this, and we've had a couple different people come to talk on the show to talk about LinkedIn. I want to ask you some questions, given that your course is very much focused on practicality. It's focused on being tactical and telling you exactly what to do. I'd love to actually pick your brain about some of the, I think, the common challenges that some people face. And I think that'll be really helpful for the audience because there are some very common questions that get asked. And I'd love for some people to be able to listen to this and get some of the answers to those. So are you game for it?
I'm on.
So the first one is, and this one is purely selfishly, I gotta know how you do this because I keep trying to figure it out. And I guess I just keep putting it off and putting it off. So I'd love your thoughts on it. I, you know, I've been on LinkedIn since probably early 2007, I think it was. You know, it was right as I was starting my MBA, I heard that I had to be on this. And, you know, I started making connections, I started meeting people, and as I look back through 1,000 plus contacts, obviously I don't know every 1,000 people. There are some people like, where did I meet this person or whatever? So, you know, I think moving forward, I've tried to categorize, here's how I met this person, et cetera, and keep better track. But the question I would have for you is, I've recently had some people contact me and say, hey, how well do you know X? And whoever that person is, I go, well, I don't really know them. And I don't remember where I met them. But maybe I recognize their name or something. Like there's a very prominent person in Philadelphia that I'm a first degree connection with. I have no idea how I met this person. How do you suggest going about reconnecting with people that you are a first degree connection with? You may not remember where you met them. And you see that there's some value in knowing them, either you helping them helping you or whatever. How do you suggest going about approaching that situation?
The first thing that you have to do is assume that both of you are responsible for this state of your relationship. Neither of you remembers each other, and that's okay. So because both of you are responsible, you can take it on yourself to send a very simple message that says, hey, we haven't talked in forever. I'd like to reconnect, let you know what I'm doing, and I'd love to hear what you're up to. Whatever version that sounds like for you, but you're basically apologizing to the person for your lack of effort. Now, they didn't do anything either. So they're probably going to respond in a very human way that says, you know what, you're right, I haven't responded either. Now, there are two things that are going to happen from that reach out. First, they're going to respond and they're going to say, oh my God, thank you so much for reaching out to me. I really appreciate it. Let's get together or let's talk or whatever it is, or you exchange email back and forth just to kind of remind yourselves where you are on this planet in relation to each other. The second thing is they're going to ignore you. And when they ignore you, they have just given you permission to kick them to the curb. So part of what I recommend that you do is every week, depending on the way my system works is it's an alphabetical system, depending on which letter you're at, if you've reached out to someone and they haven't come back with any kind of response, the next time you get to that letter that says, hey, I'm now looking through my letter J's, and the letter J's, I'm going to look through the people that haven't, you know, I can't remember who they are, I've reached out to them to reconnect, and I want them gone because it's not helping me any. I'm going to remove them from my connections so that you're pruning out those stale connections on a regular basis, as opposed to saying, you know what, I haven't pruned my connections in 1,000 years. Let me go through and just delete half the people in there. Mm-hmm. That wholesale pruning does a ton of damage because your brain is only capable, I mean, at least mine is, my brain is only capable of remembering so many different people. So I might remove someone that I just couldn't place the name in the face, but the moment I sent that vulnerable message, that person, and I have to tell you, the number of times that I have sent the message that says, I am sorry for not, you know, for not being the better friend here, the number of times that's led to an appointment is better than 50% when I send that message. Because they come back and say, oh my God, I was totally thinking about you. I remember when I met you at, and they fill in all the details for me when I met you
and
at.
And you're like, yes, CRM input.
Yes, exactly. They're doing exactly what I want. And they'll fill in all those details and they'll say, I had been thinking about you. I want to refer you to a friend. Do you have time next week for a phone call? And it's like, wow, I just reached out to apologize and I'm getting an appointment. That happens for me greater than 50% of the time. And it's, you know, I have clients who report that they get the same kind of results. The response is usually, oh my God, thank you so much, or nothing. And for the nothing responses, you're just like, great, you've just proven that I can safely remove you from my contacts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, let me ask you about that, the safely removing from the contacts. I see there's a value in being selective in who you let in your network. I see there's a value sometimes in jettisoning people from your network. There's, you know, there's obviously value there, but as myself, kind of a content producer, somebody who creates a lot of different content. Mm-hmm. Generally for me, I see that a larger audience, even if they're only paying attention 1% of the time, at least gives me a potential connection point via the content that I create. Do you see that there's two sides to this coin, or is your kind of philosophy around it that you're better off having a tighter, more connected network, and if they don't get back to you, they're probably not going to be paying attention to you anyway?
I think that's the way that I designed my course is it doesn't matter whether you want to be super duper powerful or super duper promiscuous. And that's usually how people categorize it. What I recommend people do is that they become powerfully promiscuous. And that's a fancy way of saying that you are very open to let lots of people in your network and to have a really big network and to connect with people and let the that initial energy, let it flow where it's going to go. And if it fizzles out, then maybe you remove them if it makes sense to remove them. But let yourself have a bigger network because you don't know how you show up in their world. You only know how they show up in your own world. But, you know, someone might have seen me. This has happened to me many times. Someone goes to a workshop that I'm doing. They connect with me on LinkedIn. And then 3 years later, they reach out to me for something where they want to hand me a check. So if I didn't connect with that person, I would have never had the opportunity to touch base with them on a regular basis in really simple ways, really subtle ways. I would have never had that opportunity. It just wouldn't have shown up. That would have been, hey, I'm going to make sure that my network is super duper tight with only people that I absolutely know. If someone asks me for an introduction and I can't figure out, like, if when I get that question, how do you know this person? I might say to the person on the other end, hey, you know what? I don't know them really well, but they attended one of my workshops. I'll reach out to them for you and see if I can facilitate that. But, you know, it's not a great connection. I'll just let them know where it is. It's a very, you know, honest kind of thing. But the idea is I don't know how many connections I have on LinkedIn. I don't really look at it. I know it's over 1,000 because the last time I looked, it was over 1,000, and I've gotten more since then, and I haven't pruned out as many as I've gotten. So whatever number that it's at, that's where it is. I don't think that's a good measure of your success. A great measure of your success is when you send a message to someone or when you endorse someone or write a recommendation, the response back that you get.
Yep.
So those kinds of interactions, that's really what I look for. Because I know people that have, you know, 150 connections and they're killing it. They're getting appointments. They're doing exactly what they need to do. And I know people with thousands of connections that don't do the work on LinkedIn. And so they have a hard time getting appointments. Mm-hmm. So it really is the networking activity that is what's going to drive your number of connections. And, you know, let it happen that way. Let that networking activity be what makes you successful and have a really powerful network and be open to connect with people. If someone reached out to me and said, hey, you're awesome, I want to connect with you, then I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. You probably get this as well. People who
I am pretty awesome, so that does happen a lot.
It does. Believe me, I know. Trust me. I look at it this way. I get a connection request from people who I have no idea who they are. And I'm seeing their profile and I'm going, there is no way. We are not. We have like one person in common, and that one person is one of the LinkedIn lions who's connected with everybody. And there's nothing here. So I send them a challenge request that is saying, hey, I got your connection request. Let me know why you want to it sounds something like this. Hey, let me know how you were referred to me or why you reached out. And if they respond, they can respond and say, you know what, your profile looked awesome and I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to connect and talk. Great. I take that. That's fine with me.
How many people are in your LinkedIn purgatory right now? The people that are neither accepted nor declined as LinkedIn connection requests?
I think it's about 60-some at this point.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was just me that left like entirely too many people in there. I have probably about like 35 or 40 that are in there right now.
The thing that I do is when I send that, they send me a connection request, I send the challenge response, and if they don't reply, I kind of give it some time, and then I often forget, like, oh, I haven't deleted out that purgatory since. Because I do enough screencasts and courses and things like that where I need to demo it, I always make sure I have a bunch that I can demo with so I can show people, look, here is a request from someone I don't know. This is how I would do it. So I actually, I don't want to say I'm lazy. I actively leave stuff in there so that I can, so I have something to demo with. Because I do my demos on my own account. I used to have a stunt account to do demos with, but I just found that that was... people would connect with the stunt account because they would find it accidentally. And then it's like, oh, crap, you're on the wrong account. So I just...
I actually have an account for Facebook that's purely for the agency to manage client pages. I also just recently, you may get a kick out of this, created... I think you actually know about this. I created a secondary LinkedIn account that's a superhero that's going to be, once I've built up the profile enough, is going to be leaving a recommendation for me, which I think will just be a humorous piece of content to attach to my profile. Which actually leads me to my next question that I wanted to talk to you about when it comes to LinkedIn. In terms of what you're advising clients on and them trying to get their results and get more appointments, how important do you see content fitting in? Now, when I just want to define that so it makes more sense for anybody that's listening what I'm talking about. When I say content on LinkedIn, I'm talking about the LinkedIn publishing platform. I'm talking about embedding rich media. Like on your profile, you have a number of videos, some slideshows, some pictures, all different things. And then on top of that, there's status updates. So how important are each of these things in terms of what you're advising people on versus what we've just been talking about, which is that networking side of things? It's that connection piece. How much does the content side support that stuff?
It actually depends on the person who's in the driver's seat. So lots of salespeople that they're focused on prospecting and business development, if you said to them, you need to start blogging, I don't want to say all of them, but most of them would be like a deer in headlights, and they just wouldn't do it. And the way that they would do it was they would go copy something from somewhere and maybe add a sentence. So the content that they would come up with would be, I don't want to say bad, because that's not bad enough of a description. It would be just downright terrible and pathetic and actually work negatively for them.
It's checking the wrong box. It's not checking the box of like follow a step-by-step process that Howard has put together intelligently. It's checking the box of I did something.
Right. And so I've seen people use the publishing platform in weird ways. Like they don't realize that they're writing an article. They're like, they think it's a status update. And it's bizarre. So what I typically recommend is to make a decision. Am I a writer? Am I a content creator, or is my job to be a great curator, to find stuff that people would really like? So by having that decision of, hey, I'm going to be a great curator can write one or two sentences about an article that's industry specific, and they can have that as a status update on their site. From there, if they have, or on their LinkedIn profile, from there, if they have a whole bunch of these really good curated articles, maybe then they can take like, I'll call it, let's make a list of 7 tips or 10 tips or whatever it is, and then create a piece of content from there so that there's something on their profile that's original content that kind of shows some philosophy and shows some industry awareness and things like that. But if they can't get the status updates in line and they're not a natural content creator, trying to push them into that content creation role is going to be, it's going to be just hard for them and they're not going to succeed. And frankly, if they had an hour to write that article because they were trying to do something great, I would rather them do more networking and reaching out and things like that. They'll see the result much sooner. That's for the pure salesperson. The people that are more of the creative marketers using LinkedIn, who should be doing business development and all that stuff, who do feel comfortable creating content, they should absolutely be creating content. I would say at least once a month at a bare minimum. Once a week would be awesome. I know for me, I try to do one specific for LinkedIn. I actually don't copy my content from my website onto LinkedIn. I might link to it inside of an article on LinkedIn because I might have a more detailed version of it. I write very unique things for LinkedIn's publishing platform because that's the venue. It is a venue of people who are on LinkedIn about LinkedIn. So I typically talk about things that are related there. I use my blog for my own stuff, so to speak. I don't want to say more freeform, but it's original stuff in both places. I kind of get worried about LinkedIn because its publishing platform is their publishing platform. It's not my publishing platform. So I'm always a little bit hesitant to put my best stuff on LinkedIn. But I think sometimes you need to, like I just did an article last week that was about wandering on LinkedIn. It was sort of like, hey, you are wandering in the desert on LinkedIn. And part of it was I watched someone who I was trying to train and they were just like, oh, well, I go and do this. And I'm like, dude, you're wandering. And he's like, well, I thought that's what I'm supposed to do. And I said, no. You don't wander on LinkedIn. Here are the, you know, when you read your newsfeed, you need to go like two different things. You need to place a comment here. You need to go find stuff to actively do networking. If all you do is just scroll through the newsfeed, you're just scrolling. You're wandering. You're clicking on stuff and going, wait, this is awesome. As opposed to, no, I'm going to find people in my network who are doing interesting things, and I'm going to post an intelligent follow-up to move the conversation along. Because that's going to send this amazing social signal to the other person that they've been noticed, they've been valued, and they've been valued and noticed by this person, by Jeff or by Howard or whoever's doing that activity. That's a really amazing human thing that happens. Your brain doesn't forget it. So the next time that they say, oh, I really want to do X, Y, and Z. Oh, well, Jeff's perfect for that. Why aren't I talking to Jeff? Those social signals are way more valuable than people give them credit for. I like to call them digital referrals. They're just these little things that just pop up and they're awesome that way. So
you're creating a lot of top of mind awareness by, you know, being present in people's worlds. You know, you're connecting with them, you're being in front of them with some content, things like this. How much have you found that the ads on the LinkedIn platform have played into success? Have you started playing with them at all and seeing that that's able to get, I guess more interest or awareness about what you're doing or things for your clients? Have you played with that at all?
I've played with LinkedIn ads. I can tell you I am unimpressed by LinkedIn's platform. The cost per click is really, really high.
Really high.
Really high. And you look at it and you go, are you freaking kidding me? So you might say, oh, well, I'm going to spend $200 for clicks. And you realize that for $200.
It's like 20 clicks maybe.
Right. You're getting 20 to 40 clicks. And the problem with 20 to 40 clicks is the math is bad. Yep. You can't decide, is this working or not? Because there's just not a big enough sample size. Mm-hmm. So now, all right, to get data, I always describe it as to see if data is happening, you need at least 100 as a bare minimum for data. Well, to get 100 clicks on LinkedIn to even see, are my ads converting? You're spending almost $1,000. Mm-hmm. That's a very expensive test.
Yeah.
Where if you spend $1,000 on Google AdWords.
Or Facebook ads.
You get great data. Not only do you get usable data, but you've probably tweaked it many different times and run it for a very long period of time. So I've been unimpressed with LinkedIn's ad platform. I hope they get better with it.
I'd imagine they will, but they also, I'd imagine, will follow in the footsteps of Facebook and Twitter, things like custom audiences, remarketing, conversion pixels, and things like that. I'd imagine those are things that'll come down the pike. And if you look at, you know, the evolution of Facebook, you'll see that, you know, conversions are up when you use certain objectives, and they have right. The carousel ads. So they're really evolving the platform. I think LinkedIn has just been very slow to move on it. So I was just curious if that was something that that you've been playing in.
Yeah, I've played with it. I've had some clients play with it. I've just been so unimpressed with the results that it's hard to consistently have clients try that out. Just because, you know, they'll look at it and say, oh, well, I spent $500 and I think we got 2 leads. And, you know, when you can say to someone, how about this? Why don't you give away an iPad on your website and you'll get you know, you might get 1,000 people to register for it and you might get a 5% meeting rate. Well, mm-hmm. that's much better than two leads for $250
yep.
each.
That's true.
That's bad math. And I don't like bad math.
Yeah, I don't either. So let me ask you this. So you've been really, you've been deep in the LinkedIn thing. That's really been a major focus of yours. What else have you been doing lately? Have you been playing with any of the other platforms like Blab or with Periscope, or have you been looking at, Instagram ads? Have you been, are there any other direct connection applications and networking sort of platforms that you've been looking at? That would kind of be the first piece of my question. So I'll let you run with that.
Sure. Instagram is really uniquely interesting because the platform itself doesn't lend itself to clicking and responding. So, even simple things like in your content, you can click on a hashtag and you can click on someone's profile, but you can't click on a link in a comment. And I know why they did that. That kept the platform really clean and free of spam. And the ads are where you can actually respond. So to get any kind of direct response on Instagram, you have to buy an ad. I think the downside of that is if you wanted to build an audience, Instagram doesn't reward you for having an amazingly big audience. Your direct connection with that audience is still, okay, go to my profile and click on the link on my bio. And that's really not satisfying. You have to pay for any kind of interaction. That said, it's a big audience. Their ad platform's really great. You can mix it with your Facebook ads. It's pretty awesome, and I think that it's going to keep getting better. And Facebook has done a good job with Instagram to not kill the platform in the process of getting a more mature ad platform. Because you remember, when they first started doing sponsored updates, you saw like one a day or maybe two a day. And now it's a pretty steady, like one in 10 feels like an ad.
Yep.
And
but they are getting sneakier and sneakier on all these platforms with making the sponsored the little sponsored tag on it smaller and smaller or more obtrusive, or it's using words like suggested. Well, it was suggested because
it was sponsored.
Someone paid for it. So yeah, I think that's fascinating that we are getting. I don't want to call it native advertising because that's a slightly different thing, but it is interesting that it's getting sneakier how they're slipping those in.
Right.
I wanted to also ask you the second part of my question was, the first part being, are you using any of the other platforms, Blab and things like that, which I still want to hear mm-hmm. if you've done anything with Blab. But the second thing is the things that you're talking about on LinkedIn, are these same techniques, if someone were to take your course, would they be able to apply a lot of these techniques elsewhere? Would they be able to use these same ideas if they were to go to Facebook or to use email or to use Blab or to use YouTube? How much of what you're talking about is kind of rooted in sales technique and just using the platform of LinkedIn versus very LinkedIn-specific functions?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the reason it is because all of these techniques are rooted in sales technique. LinkedIn is sort of the obvious choice for it. And that's why the first course using these methods was specifically for LinkedIn. I am trying to work out how the same kind of methodology works consistently on Facebook. Facebook is a much bigger mess to contend with in terms of how you would do different things. On LinkedIn, you can say, all right, I'm going to go endorse people and I'm going to pick specific people that I'm going to endorse. And you kind of have a very, you can make the approach very, very efficient. So you can say, I'm going to spend 5 minutes. I'm going to endorse everybody with the letter N that makes sense to endorse. I'm not going to endorse all of the N's in my network. I'm only going to endorse the people that make sense. And I'm going to do it a little bit at a time. No problem. Facebook, that's a lot messier. And that mess is my biggest challenge in designing the next iteration of that course, which is effectively powerful social sales for Facebook, which is one of the courses that I'm working on. It's not the next course. It's the course after the next course.
Okay.
The whole idea behind that is Facebook, because they evolve their platform really fast, makes it hard to kind of get a rhythm going, where LinkedIn's evolution of their product has been very slow. So it's worked out better. It's a much more business feel. If you are business to business and a salesperson, you look on Facebook and there's a lot of stuff you have to get rid of. You have to skip. Where on LinkedIn, you don't have to skip anything. It's pretty much all there for you. It's all something that you can work with. Some of the other platforms, I think, may lend themselves well to it. But, something like Twitter, a salesperson is going to look at Twitter and be completely lost. That said, I want to do a version of this system for Twitter so that I can do a, you know, powerful social sales that is LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and have all of those things integrated together. That is really part of the ultimate goal for that. I've taught people how to do it, but because the platforms move and certain ones let you do different things, I kind of feel like at a certain point I'm going to actually write an application. I probably won't write it. I will probably work with developers to write it that will take the system that I use and create all of those accountability processes and kind of give you a, hey, it's Tuesday. This is what you should be doing. And here are the people and here's how you're connected. And this is what you're going to do. And hey, this is a LinkedIn connection, or this is a Twitter connection, or a Facebook connection. So these are the actions that you can do with those that make sense on the individual platforms so that it's all kind of tied together. I have a feeling that will happen before I have all three of those networks cleanly in a course format.
Of course, and as soon as you finish creating the course for any of them, you'll need to update it, obviously, releasing the next
version. I have to say, the day I launched my course, LinkedIn rolled out a new messages feature. And I was laughing and in tears at the same time, and not tears of joy. Because when you put all these things together and it's like the course launched and the first thing they did was change the messaging platform. Thankfully, the major activities that you do really weren't affected by it, but there are a couple little tips and tricks that I show people that changed. It's like, hey, you're going to do this and now they don't work. The big thing is if someone connects with you and you want to reply to it before you accept the request, it's very difficult to find the magic reply button. It's still there. It's just in a place that's kind of hidden and under a thing. And if you roll over it, then there's a link. And if you hover over it the wrong way, you lose the link. Like it's a mess, but it works. You just have to know how to hover and be calm and keep your Zen moment with you, trying to find that little arrow, the little reply arrow. So I hope that answers the question.
Totally answers the question. Okay. Totally answers. Well, Howard, I want to thank you for your time. I know you're a busy dude. You got a role. But I want to encourage everybody that's listening to check out Howard's course. I will definitely put it in the show notes for everybody.
Excellent.
To check it out. And definitely follow Howard on Twitter and on Facebook and on LinkedIn and wherever else Howard is. And we'll put anywhere you want to be in the show notes. Speaking of which, where can people go to be social with you? What's your preferred platforms?
My preferred platforms are LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. I'm pretty social on all of them. Twitter has been a little bit, mostly because I've been doing a lot of courses. Of the three platforms, of those three main platforms, Twitter tends to be the one that if I don't get to it today, I'm okay with. Mostly because I look at Twitter as, I like using it as a real-time tool. So if I don't have time to be real-time, then I don't use it. Facebook lets you kind of time shift your relationship with people very, very nicely. Same thing with LinkedIn. If I comment on something and they get back to it tomorrow, that conversation can happen. On Twitter, if I comment on something and it doesn't happen until 2 days later from someone else, you're like, what the hell are they talking about? If it's not real time, it doesn't work real well. So I would say LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Actually, the best thing that someone can do is, and the link will be in the show notes, is go to my website and, you know, see the things that I'm doing and click on the things and connect with me through those things. Those are awesome ways to do it.
Dynamite. Well, Howard, thank you for being on the show. It's always good to see your face as
always. It's great too. And we need to have lunch soon.
Yeah, I was just going to say we need to do lunch in the city, man. So for all of you out there listening, thank you so much. Please tune in again for our next episode where we will bring in another fabulous person with another brilliant conversation. Howard, thanks again for coming on. Everyone, thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
Right on.
Thanks for listening. This has been Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. And if this is your first time listening, please do us a favor and drop by iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show and what we can do to improve the show. If you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can be notified by email about new episodes. To subscribe, just drop by truevoicemedia.com/conversations. Tune in next time where I bring on another incredible guest and have another interesting conversation. See you next time.